to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. It seems like we have some breaking news.
We do.
So we were going to talk about kind of a preview for the January 6th hearings, which are returning tomorrow to primetime. But before we get to that, you're
I got the breaking news alert,
the
push notification.
As the media that's breaking our brain
that's
and
right.
we can't get away from. So what is happening?
CNN reports that a bipartisan group of senators has cut a deal to change our election laws. This is going to be a reform of the Electoral Count Act, which probably most Americans had never thought of or considered before the conspiracy to overturn the 2020 election was put into motion by President Trump and his attorneys, among them John Eastman. They basically interpreted a very old law, the Electoral Count Act of, I think it was 1876, or after the presidential election of 1876, perhaps, that sort of clarified how the Electoral College operates and how the states submit their electors and how they're counted and that whole process for actually formally certifying at the federal level our presidential elections, which are, of course, run on a state-by-state basis. And so what Eastman and Trump's attorneys, who were attempting to do a coup, were arguing was that the vice president could choose of their own accord not to accept electors from a state. That is a heck of an interpretation of that law, and most legal scholars agreed that it was out of bounds or against the law, but it was sort of squishy enough that one of the first things after January 6th that responsible lawmakers thought was, boy, we could really update this law for the 21st century. We could kind of make the rules a little tougher so that we don't see these kinds of shenanigans. Because what we learned in the period between the 2020 election and January 6th was that there was a process by which members of Congress could object to state electors. Arizona, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, and I think one other state were among those states where members of Congress, as long as you had one from the House and one from the Senate saying that they objected to a state's electors, you would then have a period of debate. And so even before without the insurrectionists attacking the Capitol physically, the process was going to be dragged out because six different times the joint session of Congress was going to have to break up, go to their respective houses, and have a period of debate over whether or not to accept these electors. And I think it was a total of 10 or 11 Republican senators, including Ron Johnson here in Wisconsin, who said they were going to challenge electors, even though there had been recounts and lawsuits and, the Electoral College electors had met before the safe harbor date and transmitted their slates of electors, some of it which is pretty arcane and shouldn't have to be a thing that people think about, right? It should just be the election is held, it is certified at the state level, it is sent to the federal level, and then we have a new president-elect or a reelected president if that had been the outcome. So really, really encouraged that one day before tomorrow's, air quotes, final, certainly final of the summer select committee hearing, we're seeing a legislative fix that is going to make it much, much more difficult in the future for bad actors, including potentially sitting presidents in the future, to try to maintain a hold on power with a plot to overthrow a free, fair, safe, and secure election. That's what Trump tried in 2020. I think a lot of people see much evidence out there in the states that they will try again, that it was a dress rehearsal, and they've learned some things about where the guardrails are on the system. So this is a big win and good for our democracy.
It's a big, nothing's happened yet. I mean, it's basically it's a big win just in the fact that it's a bipartisan, because it seems like there's a fair amount of...
I'm sure they have at least 10 Republican senators who have agreed to it, because that'll get around the filibuster and will ensure its passage.
And so do you think this is something that could only happen in light of everything that's being learned from the January 6th
I do. I have no doubt that this process started and these conversations by lawmakers started pretty quickly after January 6th. But I think what the Select Committee has unveiled to the public has underscored the urgency of fixing this now. It is very clear that even though President Trump was told time and time again that he had lost the election, by his campaign advisors, by family members, by his White House attorneys, by the attorney general, that there was no fraud that would have changed the outcome of the vote. He pressed on and tried to find loopholes in the Electoral Count Act and, you know, had a multi-pronged strategy to use weaknesses within that law to stay in power, which included, you know, insurrectionists storming the Capitol to stop the certification of the election. So this is a big win, and it hats off to the January 6th committee.
Well, it's always good to see them actually get, it's the kind of the gun legislation, right? It's like, it's to see things actually come together and actually make some movement instead of everything being just on partisan lines is encouraging.
It absolutely is. I, everybody knows what team I'm on. But yeah. Joe Biden is going to have a bipartisan infrastructure law, a bipartisan Save Democracy law. He's going to get some health care reform done in the weeks ahead. You know, he did the American Rescue Plan. When he talked about returning to normalcy, and that was a big part of his pitch in 2020, this is what he was talking about, was actually getting stuff done. If you had asked people in a 50-50 Senate, you know, can Biden get this done, this much done legislatively? If you had asked 2 years ago, I think you would have gotten, you know, people would be like surprised that he got this much done. So, hey, Democrats out there, stop talking about what we didn't accomplish. Talk about all these great things that we have accomplished.
Hear that?
Too much.
So just as a preview, it seems like, for what is going to happen tomorrow, because it's the first time, or it's not the first time, it's the second time that it'll air during prime time, which is a strategy to probably try to get more people to watch. Although I think they have been pretty well.
Oh, yeah.
Even the viewings of them, even when they're not in prime time, I think is higher than some skeptics said they would be.
People are paying attention to this. Yeah. It is breaking through from the Cassidy Hutchison testimony to Pat Cipollone, the former White House counsel. So what we know about tomorrow's hearing is that it will be in prime time. It'll be available on all the major networks, except for Fox News. The focus of this hearing will be on Trump's actions or inactions and behavior in the 187 minutes between the storming of the Capitol, when the attack began, and when he finally put out that video message telling the protesters he loved them, but to go home. And so it's sort of what they're saying is, minute by minute, they will document the president's day. So I imagine we will see how he reacted, what he was doing. We know what he wasn't doing. He wasn't on the phone with the Department of Defense or the Department of Homeland Security or legislative leaders, you know, running the government and trying to protect the Capitol. All of those actions were taken by Vice President Pence from a secure location inside the Capitol. So we know what Trump didn't do. What I think we're going to get is some color as to how he was behaving and what he made of what he was seeing. We know that there will be two witnesses, a former deputy press secretary, Sarah Matthews, and a former deputy national security advisor, Matthew Pottinger, both of whom resigned within 24 hours. They left the Trump White House. Those are good jobs. And, you know, sort of like first on your obituary jobs. And whatever they saw from the president in the West Wing that day and what happened at the Capitol was shook them to their core to such a degree that they resigned basically on the spot. So we know we're going to hear testimony from them. We're clearly going to see more video testimony about other people who were in the West Wing that day and can speak to the president's state of mind, what he was doing, why he wasn't doing what people were urging him to do. And we're hearing some rumblings that there might be a surprise witness, that this could be another two-part hearing where they have, you know, the two individuals I just named are the witnesses for the first part. And in the second part, there could be a surprise witness. Among the things that the committee has done really, really well is produce this like a TV show. It's really hard to make a congressional hearing must-see TV, but they've done an outstanding job of this so far. And I have every reason to believe that tomorrow night's will be done the same way.
So I think week after week or session after session, they're laser focused on pinpointing Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And there's some polling and focus groups of the different smattering of news sources that I take in, including some moderate to conservative ones, including the Bulwark, that there's starting to be cracks in even huge Trump supporters, mm-hmm, of thinking that Trump's the guy in 2024. But What, as of an article I think I saw yesterday.
538 analysis.
Yep. There are at least 120 election deniers who have won their party's nomination and will be on the ballot in the fall. And this includes for governors, secretary of states, attorney generals, Senate, House. And that's not there. And they, in the article said this is likely an undercount. And all the primaries aren't done. So despite the laser focus of Donald Trump, even though there was a lot of other people involved, but these hearings focused on what he did or did not do, do you think they're going to have a ripple effect on the elections in the mid in this fall for the people who are running on or who very much believe that the election, who believe the big lie?
Boy, I hope so.
Yeah.
Because one of the most important things that people should understand is January 6th is not something that happened. This is not a historical event that we just need to understand what happened on that day. This is a thing that is ongoing and happening right now. When you have, you know, candidates for governor here in Wisconsin on the Republican side who are still flirting with the idea of decertifying our vote.
Which is not possible.
Which is not possible. When you have Republican politicians, not all of them, but some, but too many of them, who are saying that, you know, ballot drop boxes shouldn't be trusted. No, no. The problems with our democracy are not the ballot drop boxes. They are public officials using rhetoric that undermines confidence in our electoral system. So this is ongoing. People need to pay attention. And people should have should give no quarter to candidates who cannot tell you with a straight face, Joe Biden won the 2020 election. And my fear is at the national level, this, you know, ability to undermine confidence in elections is now trickling down to the local level, and we're going to have a mess. I would like to hear Tim Michaels and Rebecca Clayfish say that if they're the nominee for governor and they lose, that they'll accept that outcome. Today, I can't be sure that they will. I'm sure Tony Evers can say, if I don't get the most votes statewide, I'll vacate the day I'm supposed to. But this is a live wire. It is a real issue that every American should care about. We can disagree about issues. We shouldn't be able to disagree, or there shouldn't be any disagreements about the value and importance of democracy and of elections governing who leads, you know, in positions of public trust.
And yet, in at least one race, there's Democrats who have also boosted, as a strategic move, tried to boost someone who is not only an election denier, but it is an actual insurrectionist. Doug Mastriano, who has won the primary in Pennsylvania for governor on the Republican ticket. Democrats had kind of shoved him in the direction, the hope that he would be the candidate and in the hopes that he would be easier to beat. But now he has potentially a chance to win. And so is that a smart strategy?
It's a risky strategy that I don't feel great about. People whose job it is to win elections want to run against the weakest candidate. With Mastriano in Pennsylvania, you're seeing scores of Republicans, you know, real Republicans, like high profile names, line up and endorse the Democratic candidate for governor. I feel pretty confident that Josh Shapiro in that race, the Democratic candidate in Maryland for governor, they're going to beat these election deniers. It's a choice. It's one that comes with a lot of risk. But I understand the thinking behind it. If it's not one I would have.
Yeah. Been. Well, I wanted to ask you what your pulse is on where you think the voters of Wisconsin are on the election stuff, but we don't have much time.
I think they'd like to turn down the volume. I just think that's part of why Evers and Biden won the last two statewide races here. They're sick of all the noise and the nonsense. It's just too much, and it's going to hurt Republicans. Ron Johnson among them. He's just he's so in your face with all the nonsense. I think people just are sick and tired of it, and they're like, I want to turn down the volume. And Evers, I may not agree with everything he does, but at least he's like, you know, he's trying real hard and he's not in my face with nonsense every day.
Holy mackerel. Here's my ice cream.
Golly.
All right. We got one more segment. There's something happening this weekend that I didn't even know was a thing, but it's a really big thing. So we're going to talk about it when we get back. As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
On her own, turn home, Bourbon. Cuts a light. The night.